it comes at you quick. Life moves fast. If you can't handle it, well, you better get out of the way and off the road. It'll run you over. Speaking of getting run over, what a perfect segue. Thank you. KU football team. It's so bad, it's beyond comical. It's beyond painful. I think it's beyond embarrassing, to be quite frank with you. Whoever at Fox made a decision to put KU-TCU in primetime on Saturday night, and we laughed about it when we heard about it, and we all shook our heads and said, what are they doing? And they tried to rationalize why, because KU and TCU have had some close games over the years. Great. Have you watched KU play football this year? Apparently not. That person should be fired. Okay, maybe that's a little strong. They should be taken. Their duties of trying to select games should be taken away from them. How's that?
Yeah.
It is pretty simple for me, and I'm not a rocket scientist, and you and I talked about the other day. Out of all the Big 12 games to put primetime, to me you had at least two. Well, every option was better than that one in the Big 12. But there were two that were clearly better. And to me that was Iowa State, Texas Tech. You had 2-4-2 teams. Interesting game. Probably doesn't move the needle. You want to move the needle primetime? Oklahoma, K-State. That was the game. Now, I didn't think it was going to be a close game, Oklahoma and K-State. You didn't either.
No.
I don't know of any K-State or Oklahoma fan I talked to, and I know quite a few of them on both sides. Nobody thought that was going to be a close game. But that was the game I would have put on primetime, K-State and Oklahoma. Instead, they went with KU and TCU, and how'd that work out for Fox? While that's going on, the Game 7 ALCS is on FS1, which I know that's on FS1 to drive people to have cable. It's part of the cable package. Make more sense for that to be on Fox, the main network. But I get what they're doing. I get that. I don't get the KUTCU pick. I don't care how they rationalized it. I didn't get it then either. I mean, I understood what they're trying to say, but I was like, okie dokie. You're going to either look like a genius or you're going to look like a total moron. And they look like morons, thanks to KU's futility. If you didn't know what happened, and if you're a KU fan and didn't know what happened, then lucky you. TCU beat KU 43-0. Things were so bad that I think they made up a story about storms coming in because they both agreed to have a running clock with 12:49 to go. And somebody texted me and said, I didn't know they had a mercy rule or a running clock in the Big 12. And I said, they don't. Supposedly, storms were coming in. KU loses 43-0. Here's some numbers that will totally just blow your mind. KU had 21 yards. Not 21 yards on one play. Not 21 yards in the first quarter. Not 21 yards in the first half. 21 yards of offense the entire game on 49 plays. College Football Reference's play index tracks stats going back to 2000. KU's 21 yards, so total offense, were the worst mark out of more than 26,000 results, beating out Mississippi State's 24-yard effort against Mississippi in 2008. David Beatty, head coach at KU, said of the offense, "That's a challenge that rests on my shoulders. I've got to be able to get that going with my staff." You think? The Jayhawks never advanced the ball past their own 43-yard line offensively. That's right. They never snapped the ball in TCU territory. They finished with negative 25 rushing yards in the game. The Jayhawks had 4 first downs the entire game, with 2 of those coming off of TCU penalties. Thank you, TCU, for that. KU is now 1-6 overall, 0-4 in the Big 12. They're not even close to being competitive, and they've now lost 44 consecutive games on the road, which, if my computer will scroll up and it's having a hard time, I believe that tie the record or break the record for most road losses in a row. It's either tied or broke it.
I think it tied it
with 44. Now, technically, they've lost 46 games away from home, and that's where that stat I told you about the other day didn't mix, because there was a couple neutral site games that KU lost. So KU's lost 46 games in a row away from home, and they have lost 44 true road games, which ties the FBS record set by Western Colorado State. You got to go back to 1926 through 1936. That was a mark set a few years before the United States entered World War II. That's right. KU has tied a record that has been in existence since before World War II. That, my friends, is capital F capital U, capital, oh no, don't get dirty, folks, capital T, illity, futility. That is all caps. That is hard to do. Congratulations to the Jayhawks football team for doing something that has not been done since the 1920s and 30s. And by the way, you wouldn't just want to share that record. You want to go ahead and take it. And, oh, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because the next two games KU has are at home, so they can't break the record in that situation. Against K-State, good luck with that, and then Baylor. And those are probably the two most winnable games KU has on their schedule. And I say winnable, and I laugh inside when I say that. And then after that, I don't know who they have after that, but whoever it is, they're not going to win. And it'll be on the road, and that'll set the record. So, you know, why half it? Just go for it. That's unbelievable bad stuff, man.
It's not good.
Not good. Yeah, that'd be the biggest understatement of all time.
Yeah, and the
it's not good.
Boy, that seat's starting to burn. I didn't think it was going to this year because I was with you at the beginning of the year. It's like he's going to have to, you know, even if he goes 1-11, he'll be all right. But what did we say? Like, you got to be competitive.
You get blown out every game, you're in trouble.
Not at all competitive right now. I mean, it is bad.
It's beyond bad, beyond sad.
Yeah.
Beyond futile. And here's the thing. This is what I keep coming back to with KU football. Okay, they're really bad. I get it. And, you know, started off this year offensively doing just fine in regards to yardage. Now, they had some turnovers. And all of a sudden, it's amazing how the offense can go from being so – I mean, they scored 34 points against West Virginia. Now, Khalil Herbert's hurt. Yeah. But you don't have another running back that can gain, you know, 50 yards. In the offensive line, they have a new center because they move a right tackle to center because their center got hurt. And it shows a lack of depth because they don't have talent there at KU football-wise. And we keep hearing each and every year they're getting more talent. And they are, but it's a slow process. But here's the thing. You know, Turner Gill was pushed out very quickly after his third year, because his team, you know, they've actually won more games than David Beatty did. But they were getting blown out. They just weren't competitive. Well, here's the problem, and as you just alluded to, KU, it's not that they just are losing games. They're losing games at an alarming rate and in alarming ways. And then to get finally a primetime game on Fox for everybody in America to see, well, not that many because many people turned it off after a while, went to another station, is just flat out embarrassing for the University of Kansas. And it was reported on Twitter, and they had a snapshot of it. This is how bad it's gotten. And I really feel, I do, you know, we make fun and light of it, but, you know, those kids that are playing at KU are trying their best.
Oh, yeah.
And I do feel for them. I really do. And we've talked about, we've had a couple high school programs this year in football that broke long losing streaks. And I'm happy that they broke those streaks. I know you are too, Southern Cloud and Thunder Ridge.
Yeah.
And I hope KU breaks a streak at some point, that road losing streak. I mean, it's going to be very rewarding, much like it was very rewarding when they were able to somehow beat Texas last year at home. But right now, they're so far away, it's not even close. They're at the very bottom of the mountain, and they try to step up a couple of feet, and they keep slipping and falling. This team will not win another game this year. If they do, I think it'll be a modern-day miracle. But the fact they're getting blown out on primetime TV, 43-0, and only 21 yards of offense, when the defense couldn't do anything the first three or four games, when the offense actually was not bad, then you finally get a good defensive effort, and the offense and special teams are horrible at Iowa State. The defense, by the way, wasn't horrible against TCU. It wasn't good, but it wasn't horrible. And KU's offense is just absolutely dreadful. So if you're a KU fan out there, I'm sure you're talking about it. I've heard the term dumpster fire. You fire David Beatty. Who do you hire? I mean, who in the world?
That's always the question.
Who in the world? This having that game on primetime on Saturday made things so much worse for KU. Mm-hmm. And forget the stats. Just the way they lost this game. If you're an aspiring coach in America, you're at some MAC institution, or if you're at some low-level football program and you want to ascend to a Power 5 conference, I would stay away from the KU football job until it does get turned around a little bit. And the other thing is, Shane Zinger, how can you possibly let him hire the next head football coach?
Oh, yeah.
Shane Zinger is 0-3, okay? It's been brutal. Now, maybe it's impossible. I don't know. Maybe it's impossible. I would say it's not because Mark Mangino won, and don't they wish they had him back? But it's got so bad, ladies and gentlemen, those of you listening right now on the radio, if you don't know this, And this is where I feel for the coaches and the players. And I would say this of any program that's going through this, because it is, I mean, just think about it. If you're one of those players or coaches, how would you feel about not only losing, but not even having a chance to win, basically? Doug Meacham was hired on as offensive coordinator at KU this year. And there's a picture of media members getting ready for something in the hallways there at the stadium. And in the background, the door, somehow the door is open enough, and Doug Meacham is on, the offensive coordinator at KU, is on the second step of the stairwell with his head in his hands. Let that sink in for a moment. You don't think he cares? You don't think David Beatty cares? You don't think those players care? They're trying. And I think they're trying their best. But they're going into a gunfight with a toothpick. And how you turn that around, you have to recruit. You have to get more talent. You cannot go the junior college route. We saw Charlie Weiss try that. That did not work out well. You need time. But the problem is, are you going to get time? You have an AD, I think, that's squarely in a hot seat with each and every passing loss by KU. And I think he's on more of a hot seat, perhaps, than maybe the head coach. Although, there was an article recently saying that Shane Zinger is supported by the boosters. If the boosters support him and continue to donate money for the $350 million football project, which seems laughable right now, then he's okay. He's safe. That means David Beatty's in trouble. And I just can't imagine letting Shane Zinger hire another football coach. And because of that, if Shane Zinger is going to stay in as the AD, I think David Beatty will be the head coach next year. And I think KU football fans have gotten to the point where they're just like, they've thrown their hands up. I don't even care anymore.
Yeah.
It doesn't even matter. It's a dumpster fire, as many KU fans have texted and emailed me. It's a dumpster fire, Wade. Nobody wants the job. Don't even bother firing Beatty. If he wants to be there, God bless him. If Doug Meacham wants to be there, God bless him. And just let them do whatever they can to win a few games. It's kind of the, I'm indifferent, don't care anymore. Now, in Nebraska, when you're 3-4, the sky is falling. At KU, you're 1-6, the heck with it. Why? Because you have KU basketball. KU exhibition game against Missouri yesterday at Sprint Center. Sold out immediately. They raised over $2 million. The showdown for relief. KU men's basketball team defeats Missouri 93-87 was the final. KU was down at halftime by 4, then used a big run in the second half, a 33-16 run. Devontae Graham was fantastic, 25 points. By the way, you could have heard that scrimmage, or exhibition game, on Z96.3 Lake. We had it for you. You're home for the Jayhawks here this upcoming basketball season and during the football season. I don't think we'll have all the exhibition games on the radio play-by-play because of some scheduling things, but we will have the regular season games, as always, on Z96.3 The Lake. KU, the preseason number 3 team. It was an amazing atmosphere. I didn't get to watch the game because I would have had to pay for it, and I'm cheap, and I didn't want to pay for it. That and it was an exhibition game, but I saw lots of video that media members put on Twitter and Facebook, and it doesn't surprise me. They hadn't played in 5 years. There's a few. I heard a K-State fan post. I didn't hear. Saw a K-State fan post on Twitter about not understanding why such a big deal for an exhibition game. You must have lived under a rock for the entire life, because KU Missouri is one of the biggest rivalries in college athletics, and it is certainly in this region. It goes back to the Civil War, and I could do a whole history lesson for that young person that put that on Twitter. It's a little bigger deal than Missouri State versus K-State, an exhibition game. In fact, it's eons bigger. It's a huge deal. And Missouri left the conference, and KU said, you know what? You left. See you later. You left the altar. We don't want to be married to you anymore. We don't want to date you anymore. We're not interested. And Missouri comes back. But we really like you. We really do. We just circumstances. We had to leave the conference. And so people say, well, why didn't KU just suck it up and play Missouri? Well, they did. In an exhibition game, they did for relief, for hurricane relief, raised over $2 million. It was a very entertaining game. Lots of talent on the floor because if you don't know, Missouri, as bad as they were last year, brought in Quanzo Martin, who is a terrific recruiter, which still I wonder about that because he doesn't get lots of victories and make deep runs in the tournament. But he gets Michael Porter Jr., the number one recruit in America, supposedly. And he had 20 points yesterday, 21, but he had to take 20 shots to do it, 6 of 20. He struggled, but he'll still be a stud. Missouri's got some really good talent. KU was down at half, came back, had a 17-point lead, then Missouri cut it to six, and that was the final, 93-87. Devontae Graham, 25 points, and get this, he had 10 rebounds, which is a bad sign for KU from that standpoint. They got beat on the glass, 41-37. Coach Self wasn't happy with that, but he went with a small lineup. He only played eight players. Billy Preston looked pretty good at times. Freshman, 12 points on the game. LeGerald Vick had 13 points and defended Porter at times. Fee Mikhailuk, who came back, looked not good. Malik Newman had a good second half, a poor first half, had 17 points. And Azubuike was dreadful, as Bill Self said, bad in the first half, was really good in the second half. And KU used him inside to take advantage, and they won the ball game by six. They were allowing seven fouls per player in this exhibition game at Sprint Center yesterday. And believe it or not, a player fouled out. Jeremiah Tillman, very talented player from Missouri, had seven fouls and fouled out of the ball game. A lot of people joked, oh, there's going to be seven fouls per player? It's a KU game? Don't they already get seven at Lawrence? Funny joke. I get it. Funny. So KU wins. Raised a ton of money. Bill Self was asked after the game, okay, so you're going to play Missouri now on a regular basis? What do you think about that? And Self said, we're not. There's not any better chance than there was before. His dad came up with this idea. Bill Self Sr. came up with the idea about, why don't you contact Missouri and have a neutral site game at Sprint Center and raise money for charity for hurricane relief? It was his idea. Mm-hmm. And Bill Self said, you know what? I'll swallow my pride on this one. I think it's a great idea. And they raise money for charity. Here is my recommendation to the University of Kansas and to the University of Missouri. If you're not going to play each other during the regular season, which as a fan I would love to see, but I understand KU's situation. I understand being a little bit stubborn, saying, listen, we play Kentucky, we play Duke Champions Classic almost every year. We play enough teams our non-con. We don't need to help Missouri out. I get it. I understand it. But for the fans, that was tremendous yesterday for both sides. And for your own fans, I would ask Bill Self to at least consider somehow, some way, having a neutral site game in the future every year, whether it's regular season, or if this is the best we can do, I'm all for it. Make this an annual event during the exhibition season, if the NCAA will allow it. Make it all for charity. You have your pay-per-view TV, as they did, which they raised a lot of money on that. And you can have it on the radio with no paid commercials, which is what they did on the IMG network, which is fine. We didn't make a penny by having that game on the radio yesterday, but we did it to have it for the fans so they can listen to. Do it for charity every year. Exhibition game, have it at Sprint Center every year, and all the money goes to some kind of charity or charities. Maybe there's a charity designated by the University of Kansas and one by the University of Missouri. And I'm telling you, people will continue to go there in droves and sell it out just like they did yesterday. Mm-hmm. Now, you would say, well, that might get old after year. No, not in this rivalry. They eat it up. What I love to see is that both universities would get together and say, listen, all right, let's bygones be bygones. Let's do what's right by the fans in this rivalry, and let's start it up again, and it's going to take Kansas to do it. Kansas is holding all the cards in this situation. Missouri will do it in a heartbeat, which you understand why they do it in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Do a home-and-home. Next year, and since KU holds the leverage, if I'm KU, I say to Missouri, you come to our house next year, we'll play you in the non-con. And then the next year, we'll go to Missouri. Or if KU wants to really be a little bit egotistical and pump their chest a little bit, they can say to Missouri, all right, we feel we're the better program. You really run a play us, okay? Then it's 2-for-1. All right, we play at Allen next year, non-con regular season game. The next year we go to Columbia. The year after that, we play in Lawrence. And then we'll reevaluate it at the end of that three-year cycle. I would be all for that. If I'm Missouri, I don't think you got to get all stuck up and say, well, that's not going to work. If you really want to play KU, you would accept that offer and then reevaluate it. You'd at least get one game at home, two at KU, but at least you have the rivalry and play the game. Or, like I said, if this is all we can get and that's not even an option, then at least give us an exhibition game every year at Sprint Center to raise money for charity for a good cause. Because there are charities that can use that money, trust me, each and every year. Even if we don't have a whole bunch of natural disasters, a whole bunch of hurricanes. And by the way, I will bet you a year from now, Puerto Rico still needs money to rebuild. Mm-hmm. Why not do it for Puerto Rico again next year? Or all the folks affected by hurricanes. Why can't they do it again next year? Why does it have to be a one-time thing? We shall see. Raised over $2 million, folks, for an exhibition college basketball game. That's got to be the biggest exhibition college basketball game maybe ever.
Yeah.
And it was treated like a regular season game. I mean, for the most part. There was intensity. The fans were into it. The players really wanted to win. And I think it was a win-win. KU won, so that's good for them. Missouri was very competitive. They're an up-and-coming team in SEC with their young talent, with a new head coach. They held their own, fought to the end. I think it's a win-win for both sides. It was like the perfect scenario. I think the worst scenario would have been for KU losing the game. The best-case scenario for Missouri would be to win the game. But I think it's a win-win for both sides the way it played out.
Yeah.
And for charity, of course.
That. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest part of it is the for charity aspect, because I know that, you know, I'm away from the rivalry because I'm not a fan of either one of these teams. But for me, if I'm on the outside looking in, that's what I want to understand and want to make sure I know about is you know, how'd the charity part of it go, you mm-hmm. know, because that's what it was for.
Yes.
And, you know, they're probably not going to get together every exhibition season even and play a game all the time just for fun. You know, like yeah. they might do the charity thing. And they might be able to get some kind of exemption to be able to continue to do that if they look into that. But for me as an outside fan looking in, that's what I'm looking at. You know, from the other aspect of it, obviously it went well for KU to get the win. And Missouri's got to feel good about the way they played against a team like KU. But, you know, I kind of also understand and recognize that neither one of these teams has been on the floor here this season. KU went to, you know, overseas during the summer, but as far as actually this season against competition here, neither one of them been on the floor. So that, you know, there's gonna be highs and lows and good things and bad things from each team, and like you said, we were not able to watch it and actually see what happened, but I would guess that Missouri feels good about the way that they played, especially being up at halftime and against a very solid Kansas team again this year. So yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody can walk out of there feeling really bad about anything. Like they've got to feel good about pretty much everything that went down there in Kansas City, and the crowd has to as well, I think.
Other reasons why it was a success: one, nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
Two, you got young players on both teams: Billy Preston, Marcus Garrett, two talented freshmen for KU, and other young players. And Missouri, of course, has young players with Porter. They got to play in a very intense environment to get them ready for conference play later on and also for the NCAA tournament later on in March. So I thought that was good for them to have that. And I think for Coach Self, one of the reasons why I think he was looking forward to this exhibition game against Missouri was when they went to Italy, they had all those practices, but when they went to Italy, all those games were not as competitive as they thought they might be. They were really bad teams they played. And I think Coach Self knew that really didn't help his team a lot, the games. Scrimmages did.
Yeah.
And so in practices did. So then he's like, hey, there's opportunity here. Yes, it's for charity and that's the main reason, but also gives me a chance to get a better idea of what my team can and cannot do. And it sounds like, based on what Coach Self said in his post-game conference on the radio, that some of the kids the younger guys weren't buying into what he was trying to preach as to, hey, we need to go rebound. That's going to be an issue. And then it was proven yesterday. So now he's got it on tape against a very talented team. You know, you can use it on tape from Italy. Oh, well, who cares? I'm better than that guy. I can get the rebound. Yeah. No big deal. Well, you're going up against some really good players in Missouri. It's a whole different story. So it's a teaching moment, is what Coach Self was saying. So it's a resounding success, I think, for Missouri, KU, and for charity. And I hope they do it every year. And, you know, the other thing, I saw this. Somebody considered this idea, and I'm all for it. Have a doubleheader. Have a doubleheader at Sprint Center. Do K-State, Wichita State, an exhibition game. You know, Wichita State wants to play KU and K-State so badly. We get it. Well, okay, do an exhibition game. Have a doubleheader. Have Wichita State, K-State, the appetizer. Have that played at, do it on Saturday. Probably not Saturday. You don't want to go against college football. So probably Sunday. Do that at, say, 2 o'clock. And then have KU, Missouri play at 5 or 4:30 or whatever you want to do. And have that be the entree. And that's no disrespect to K-State or Wichita State basketball, but that's just, we know that KU-Missouri is a bigger battle, obviously, as a rivalry. It's not even close. But that would be good for all of Kansas, I think, because you have Wichita State playing K-State in an exhibition game, raise money that way, and then have KU-Missouri. You know, K-State-Missouri State doesn't have the same feel as K-State-Wichita State.
No, and that's what, you know? And I think they threw the Missouri State thing together real quick. Yeah, and, sure. And I think if they had more time, that's what I would want to do is go play Wichita
State. That would have raised a lot more money.
And it helps your team more than Missouri State does, too.
Right.
And so it's like, go if you're going to play somebody in Wichita State's not even in the Valley anymore, they're up in the American Conference. So
rank eighth in the preseason polls, be a little bit of a barometer for K-State.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when I heard they were playing Missouri State, I'm like, why not get the Shockers to come to town or go to, you know, they're not going to go to Wichita on a Saturday. They did that before the football game on purpose so they could have maybe more fans coming in because there's not going to be as much interest in a K-State-Missouri State game as Kansas-Missouri. So,
obviously.
And so they obviously calculated when and where they played that game to try to get those football fans to come on down and be part of the basketball scrimmage. Now, I don't know how much attendance was at that one, but I know, you know, 10, 20 people that I know that went to the game. But it's not a big of a deal at all. I mean, that's the first thing that popped into my mind when I heard they were playing Missouri State. It's like, get the Shockers into town. I'm sure they'd do it.
I'm sure they would. All right, after this 30-second timeout, we will look back at K-State's loss to Oklahoma. Plenty of things to touch upon, including a running back for K-State frustrated with the offense. For the best darn food in a railroad town, visit Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. They have prime rib on Wednesday evenings, plus they have daily specials, and they have new menu items, plus a full-service bar and all kinds of fun, including billiards, keno, games, darts, and you can watch the big games on the high-definition flat-screen TVs. Carryout orders are accepted, and they have free Wi-Fi connections. They're open Tuesday through Saturdays. That's Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs at 618 Morgan Avenue. Stop by or call 454-3630.
Had a great look in their eye. You know, they were determined to come out and play a lot better. But the mentality really went to another level there, kind of in the locker room at halftime, and they're really ready to play.
Oklahoma head coach Lincoln Riley talking about his team and their mentality in the locker room at halftime when they trailed Kansas State in Manhattan on Saturday, 21-10. The Cats were up at that point in time. At one point, K-State was up 21-7. Alex Barnes with a 75-yard touchdown run right off the bat, and that gave them some momentum. K-State was fired up. They had more passion for this game than anything close to the TCU game. I talked to people right next to me that goes to all the games, and they said, listen, we had no fire, no passion last week. Now, all the delays probably didn't help.
No.
But TCU still had to play with it, and they won by 20. And so
TCU didn't have a lot of fire and passion either.
Well, how would you?
Better that day.
They were just better. So K-State came out fired up, and they get the early lead. Then Baker Mayfield goes right down the field, 7-7. K-State ends up 21-7. And you know, unbelievable. Dana Dimmel, apparently somebody else took over the play-calling duties at K-State in the first half because they were actually, you know, they're throwing wide receiver screens a lot, safe passes with Delton. They were running it with Delton, but they're running it with Barnes. They gave the ball to Silliman. They even gave a carry to Warmack in this game. And I'm like, hey, they're mixing it up. I like this. You know, Barnes, 75-yarder. Next drive, he gets a couple carries. All right, it makes sense. He did fine. He had another 19-yarder. I'm like, we've been preaching this. Use your running backs to take the pressure off your quarterback, which will make it harder for the defense to key on you. So play calling in the first half was pretty good. And then Alex Delton, 21-7 game, throws an interception deep down the left sideline late in the first half. Was not a good decision. Bad decision. Remember, it's only his second career start. Bad choice. Bad decision. Picked off. Almost returned for 6. And after that play, Dana Dimmel did the Andy Reid with Alex Smith. Super conservative for the next quarter or more as soon as that interception happened. Now, you could argue they were a little too aggressive in that situation, up 21-7 with Delton throwing that pass, if in fact that was the play call that they sent down. But I would give Dana Dimmel the play calling in the first half. I'd give him an A. It was pretty solid. He mixed it up. He was more diverse. We had people around me going, oh my God, who's calling the plays? It was a running joke in our section. Mm-hmm. But Oklahoma won this game, and K-State's very lucky they're even in the game. As well as K-State played offensively, their defense played poorly. And Oklahoma, in the first half, had the ball at the K-State 1, the K-State 6, and the K-State 19 in the first half alone. And on those three drives, they scored a total of 3 points. They should have scored 21, at least 17. They threw a pick on an unbelievable interception by Goolsbee in the back of the end zone, which looked like it was a touchdown, and he ripped it away. Unbelievable play. For some reason, Lincoln Riley, who I thought was doing a magnificent job with his play calling, I'm like, this is fun to watch. The way he calls these plays and misdirection and lots of play action and then just straight dropbacks and then he rolls his quarterback out mixes the run with the pass. I'm like, man, I love this. He's calling the game that I would want my offensive coordinator to call. And then all of a sudden, he decides to take Baker Mayfield off the field on third and fourth and short at the K-State 19 and has Flowers, a big running back, running Wildcat. You've got a Heisman Trophy candidate at quarterback who can run the ball, and you line up in the shotgun with the Wildcat. And not once, but twice, and K-State knows what's coming, they stop on both times, turnover on downs. If that wasn't bad enough, Oklahoma then gets down to the one-yard line. Third and goal at the one. Baker Mayfield, they take off, line him up as a wide receiver. Don't get under center and do a quarterback sneak because that's just forbidden for most teams anymore. It's against the law, apparently. And they run the Wildcat with the Flowers guy when it didn't work the last time. You're at the goal line, and guess what K-State does? They stuff it, and they settle for a short field goal. If Lincoln Riley calls the game like he should have and leave Baker Mayfield in to actually play quarterback, that's what he's, you know, recruited to do, Heisman Trophy candidate who can run it in or throw it in for a touchdown, Lincoln Riley was K-State's best defense, to be quite honest with you. Mm-hmm. And then K-State got a gift. They're down 28-21 and a snap over the punter's head that turned into a short touchdown drive. Oklahoma left 21, maybe 24 points on the field by their own mistakes or bad play calling. And give K-State credit for stuffing the Wildcat a couple times. I get it. Oklahoma scored 42 points. They should have scored 59. And they should have won this game by over 20. They were their own worst enemy at times. K-State defense had to face 79 offensive snaps. Now, before you want to rag on the K-State offense, well, that's the K-State offense didn't do enough, and the defense had to be out there too long. No. The reason K-State's defense on the field so much is because they couldn't stop Oklahoma. 7.8 yards a play. Allow 619 yards, which would have been 650 if not for the snap over the punter. It went back 30 yards. 410 yards passing to Baker Mayfield, 209 rushing. They were lucky. K-State was lucky to be tied with 225 to go, 35-35. Very lucky. Alex Delton, 12 of 14, 144 yards. A touchdown, interception late in the second, which was a bad decision, bad pass. But he made a great throw on that touchdown pass to Zuber. Terrific, right on the money to tie the game at 35 with 225 to go in the fourth, but you knew K-State scored too quickly. You just knew it. Mm-hmm. Alex Delton running the football, 27 carries, 142 yards, but only 4 yards in the second half rushing. He had 15 carries for 138 yards, according to the stats that I had. It was on Twitter. They had a picture of it. 15 for 138 in the first half. In the second half, Alex Delton, 12 carries for 4 yards. He had 3 touchdown runs. Delton played really well. There's no question. K-State, 56 offensive snaps. They averaged 7.4 yards per play, 412 yards total. 268 on the ground, 144 through the air. But let's get back to the play calling, because here's the thing. This was a fun and entertaining game. And K-State, there are many ways you could say if K-State would have called things better in the third quarter when they got super conservative, that they might have or could have won this game or should have won this game. You could also, as an Oklahoma fan, say, listen, you should have never been in the game. We scored 3 points on 3 possessions inside your 20 through a pick in the end zone. We run a stupid Wildcat formation, not once, but twice inside your 20 and get stuffed. And then we snap the ball over a punter's head. You're lucky you were even in the game. We should have won by 20 to 30. And that's a fair assessment by both sides. Fair assessment by both sides. 42 running plays for K-State in this game. 42. 27 of those 42 go to Alex Delton. Alex Barnes, 6 carries, 110 yards, touchdown run. This was a major topic of conversation in the section I was sitting in. I even screamed out, where is Barnes? Alex Barnes had 3 carries for 96 yards, including a 75-yard run and a 19-yard run. It wasn't just one run. 3 carries, 96 yards, in the first quarter. Obviously, you feed that guy, right? Obviously.
Generally, yeah.
But not at K-State. Not if you're Dana Dimmel. Because apparently that was just, you know, that's all Barnes was supposed to have in the first quarter and the second quarter and the third quarter. That's right. Alex Barnes did not get another carry until the fourth quarter. He came back in the game at times. They wouldn't give him the ball. Remember the game at Vanderbilt when Justin Silman came into the ball game in the third quarter? Boom, three runs, I think 40 yards total. Gave a spark, had an unbelievable run where he pushed forward a pile about 10 yards and the offensive line was pushing him. There was a spark to the offense. And then Justin Silman, obviously you'll keep feeding the ball, right? No. Didn't run the ball one more time the rest of the game. Kept going to number 16. Ertz. And now he's hurt. Alex Delton, they kept feeding him over and over. After a really good first half of play calling by Dana Dimmel, after Alex Delton threw the interception late in the second quarter, Dana Dimmel went into a shell. Third quarter, first two possessions, completely ultra-conservative, playing not to lose the game. And what happens? 21-10, Oklahoma gets the ball to start third quarter. 21-17, K-State super-conservative. 21-20, K-State super-conservative. Oklahoma goes up, 26-21, gets a two-point conversion, 28-21. Oh, crud. I need to throw the ball now. That's exactly what happened. All of a sudden, Dana Dimmel's like, oh, now 21's not going to be enough. Who would have thunk it? 21 points against Oklahoma is not enough to win. What a mind-boggling thought that is. Dana Dimmel, you had Oklahoma on the ropes. Kansas State's offense was clicking. And just because he threw one interception late in the second quarter, which was a bad decision by him or by you to have that throw called, whatever the case may be, you have to score more than 21 points. And if you seriously thought you could run the same type of offense or go even more conservative and be more predictable in the third quarter against Oklahoma's defense, which you knew was going to make adjustments, which Lincoln Riley just said, we made halftime adjustments. Yeah, the adjustment was stop number five. He is a better runner than we thought. I think Oklahoma disrespect K-State from this perspective. They didn't really stop the run. And I don't think they brought enough guys in the box like TCU did. And they should have. But Oklahoma thought, we can still wrap them up. We're Oklahoma. So they disrespected Delton and Kansas State running game. And they got hit in the mouth by Barnes. And then Delton ran the ball well. And then Oklahoma halftime said, oh, wait a minute. We got to wake up. You know what? We should have more than 10 points because we left 17 on the field there on those three drives. But you know what? Let's stuff the run. Let's take away the run. So then the third quarter, they take away the run, plus Dana Dimmel continues to run number five, and not run anybody else. And then he doesn't even throw it down the field, as he did a few times with some play action in the first half, which were good calls. So then when you get down 28-21, now it's time to open up the offense again. And if not for a punt snap over the head of the punter to set you up on a short field, you wouldn't have had a chance to probably come back. 28-28, down 35-28. And Delton makes a couple big throws deep down the field to Pringle. One was a really bad throw, but Pringle made an adjustment, made the catch. And then he made a great pass to Zuber for the touchdown to tie it. And then the game falls on who? The Kansas State defense. And they couldn't get it done. Oklahoma marches down the field, and then they're trying to set up for a field goal, run a wide stretch play, and K-State can't bring him down. And he scores a touchdown to win the game with 7 seconds to go. But let's get back to the thing that really bugged me and irks me. And I'm sure it irks lots of K-State fans. And you have to be happy to an extent that you gave Oklahoma a great game. You didn't expect K-State. Most K-State fans didn't expect K-State to give OU much of a game at all, especially with Delton a quarterback. And I think you do need to give credit Dana Dimmel that he called a pretty good first half. But here's the thing that has been an issue for Kansas State. And it's becoming more and more of an issue, and it seems to be getting worse and worse each year, in my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong. K-State's win against Baylor, 37%. Of the running plays went to running backs, 37%, which still is very abnormal for most college teams. Mm-hmm. But still, let's present it as it is. These are facts. 37% of K-State's running plays against Baylor went to the running backs, not the quarterback, and K-State won that game. Now, I know Baylor's not as good. I get it. 26% of the time, they gave the ball to the running back on the running plays at Texas and lost in overtime. I get it. They could have won that game. It's a loss. TCU, 15% of their running plays against TCU went to running backs. No wonder they lost, only scored 6 points. And then against Oklahoma, 36% of their running plays, so they're back up to 36%, of their running plays went to running backs, and they lost by 7. Now, one thing I should have done is I should have broke down what was the percentage that went to the running backs in the first half, and what was the percentage that went to the second half? And I can tell you, the second half percentage of running backs, it went down, and so did the productivity for the K-State offense. I'm not saying that Justin Silman and Alex Barnes and Delvin Wormack are the Heisman Trophy future winners in college football. I'm not saying they are unbelievable running backs, and all their talent is being wasted. But I will say this.
I'm not saying the first two things, but I am saying the last thing. Their talent's being wasted.
It is being wasted. And I'm going to say this right now. If you're a running back, if you're a young person out there listening right now, and if you watch Kansas State football, and even if you're a K-State fan to an extent, and you are a young up-and-coming running back, and you like to carry the football, let me give you some advice. Stay away from Manhattan. Unless you're a quarterback that can run the ball, or unless you're going to be a running back that goes to K-State and converts to be their quarterback, if you want to carry the ball 15, 20 times a game, or God forbid 10, stay away from Bill Snyder Family Stadium. Go to the University of Kansas. You'll at least get the ball a lot. You might not have anybody to block for you, but at least you'll get the ball. And maybe you can make a few plays. Khalil Herbert ran for over 200 yards in a game. It can be done. So let's hear from Alex Barnes. Listen to this comment and these sound bites very, very, very closely, K-State fans, if you're listening. Listen very carefully and listen to the question, the way the questions are phrased as well. I think more on that in a moment. Let's hear from Alex Barnes. Alex Barnes, let me reset this. A 75-yard touchdown run to start the game. His next carry went for 2. His third carry went for 19. 3 carries, 96 yards. He's averaging 32 yards a carry. He did that all in the first quarter. He's on his way to a huge day. Best defense against Alex Barnes is Dana Dimmel. Alex Barnes gets 3 more carries, not until the fourth quarter. He was not hurt. He was not suspended or benched from what we know, because he was out there as a decoy. 3 carries, 96 yards, first quarter. Not a carry again until the fourth quarter in a game that was up for grabs. Here's Alex Barnes.
It's tough when you feel like you can go out there and make a difference and not really getting that opportunity.
Could this have been a bigger game for Alex Barnes?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The frustration of feeling like this could have been a bigger game for you, is that something that you'll voice your concerns about?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a guy that's frustrated. I'm going to tell you right now. I was sitting there at the game, and fans around me, including myself, were frustrated. And K-State still had a chance to win the game, and we were frustrated because we're sitting there going, oh, my God, Delton again, right. Delton left, Delton right. Delton left, Delton right. Does Dana Dimmel know that he has another guy that can actually take the ball and run and be effective? It'd be one thing if Alex Barnes started, Dusty, with 3 carries for 4 yards. That would be one thing, which I will argue with running backs. You need carries, getting a bit of a rhythm, all right? But 3 carries, 4 yards, okay, fine. We don't think Barnes has it, and we're going to have to do something different. Okay, Delton's our best running back, so we're going to give it to him over and over. Okay, I'd understand that a little bit. But when the guy goes 3 carries, 96 yards, and you don't even give him the ball till the fourth quarter, you go 2 full quarters without giving him the ball in a tight game all the way through, it's laughable, it's comical, and it's ridiculous. And after the game, Bill Snyder was asked about it, and he's like, oh, you know, this is the way we're playing. And then let me see if I can pull up the exact quote by Coach Snyder here. Coach Snyder, on Alex Barnes not getting the ball much after his long touchdown run. It's just that some of the things we were doing, we did not have a running back in the ball game at all. It was just because of the nature of what we were doing. Part of it was the quarterback run game. Well, that's great. But guess what? When the quarterback run game was good in the first half, you also had Barnes involved. And guess what? They worked hand in hand. Third quarter, you don't put a running back out there. Guess what the defense is keying on?
The quarterback that runs.
Number 5. And what happens? They stuff him. They stuff him. They stuff him. And then eventually you throw a running back out there and then still don't give him the ball. It's mind-boggling, and it's sad. I don't even know why K-State has running backs on their roster. I don't even know why they bother to label it that. Just put it decoy. Just call them decoys. Alex Barnes is frustrated. You heard it, and he should be frustrated. If I'm frustrated, and K-State fans are frustrated, imagine how Alex Barnes feels when he goes off for a 75-yard touchdown, 3 carries, 96 yards. He's like, yes, I finally got it going. And you don't allow Oklahoma to shut him down. You shut him down on your own. Does Alex Delton have something on the coach's blackmail that he's supposed to have 27 carries a game? What am I missing here? Like, I don't want to be one of those people like, oh, yeah, it's always easy to pick on the play caller, Wade. It's always easy to pick on that guy. Could you do better, Wade? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I get it. I think I could have done a better job Saturday. I do. I truly believe that. Now, do I think overall in my career I do a better job than Dana Dummel? No. I'm not naive or stupid. All right? But it's pretty clear. If regular Joes and Schmoes like me and others in that section, listen, it is so much easier to defend a team when you only have the quarterback out there to run the ball. And you also know he's not great at throwing the ball, and based on every play you called in the first half, you're not comfortable with him throwing the ball deep very often. So what will Oklahoma do? Oh, I know. We're just going to put a lot of guys in the box and dare Dalton to throw it deep. Oh, the offensive coordinator doesn't want to take a shot deep because he's scared of throwing a pick. And then we'll just go ahead and tackle five. Let me repeat. 15 carries, 138 yards, first half for Alex Dalton. Second half, 12 carries, 4 yards. Did I get that right? Yep. 12 carries, 4 yards, second half. Allow Alex Barnes to help your quarterback. Whether it's Justin Simmons against Vanderbilt for Jesse Ertz, whether it's Alex Barnes for Alex Dalton against Oklahoma, allow the guys that are on scholarship, allow those running backs who you brought on to, I thought, run the ball a little bit, allow them to take some of the pressure off of you, the offensive coordinator, and your quarterback. Allow that to happen to where the defense, God forbid the defense actually, you know what, they're already focused on the running game, but they're focused on number five. At least if you had 34 out there and actually gave them the ball a few times second, third quarter, or number 32, Silman, or Barnes, 34, whoever it is, you at least make Oklahoma have to be honest defensively to be ready for a counter to the running back, or a draw to the running back, or an off-tackle play to the running back. You at least make them stay honest in the running game to key on a couple of guys. Now, they're already got a lot of guys in the box. And if you're going to sit there and argue to me, if Dana Dimmel would, well, the reason I don't run my running backs is because Oklahoma was playing against the run. Well, then why didn't you take more shots down the field? Well, Alex Dalton's good enough to run the ball 27 times, but Alex Barnes is only good enough to run it 6 times. 3 in the first quarter, 3 in the fourth quarter. My head's about to explode. It's ridiculous. I run out of adjectives to describe KU football. I run out of adjectives to describe the play calling.
Yeah,
And I want to say this. It's a little bit fool's gold because I've heard this. Well, K-State, listen, Wade, what Dana Dimmel did allowed K-State to have the ball and tie the game with 2:25 to go. Okay. He also needed a punt snap over the punter's head. He needed Oklahoma 3 times to fail inside the red zone in the first half for that to even be a possibility. Had Oklahoma scored all the way they were supposed to have scored, this game would have got out of hand big time.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things with K-State offensively. And I don't know if I've said this on here before, but just talking with people, it's like I know this isn't just a problem at K-State because I've talked to a lot of different people about who they cheer for, and every single one of them has questions about play calling
sure.
all the time.
Absolutely.
And so that's I do want to throw that out there. I don't think anybody's going to think that play calling's perfect for any team
no.
that they cheer for. But
let me make this noted. I gave credit to Dana Dimmel in the first half because he
yeah.
did mix it up. I gave him credit. It worked.
Yeah.
But Oklahoma made adjustments at halftime, and he did not.
No, and he hasn't
no.
for quite some time, to be completely honest with you. But I'm going to go back to the Oklahoma game 2 years ago because we're talking about Dana Dimmel's play calling. The week before they played Oklahoma, when they got beat 55-0 at home 2 years ago, the week before that, Texas gave them the blueprint on how to beat Oklahoma. They did. Run the football. 6 of the first 7 plays were passes against Oklahoma. And everybody there was just dumbfounded. It's like, what are we doing? Texas showed you beat Oklahoma on the ground. We have a running game. And it back then, it was probably a better running game than what it is now. And it's like, what are you doing? They put it on film. They put the blueprint out there for you. Just do it. And if you're worried about that, they know, and that was the excuse 2 years ago, it's, oh, they knew that we were going to be running the football, so we wanted to mix it up a little bit. If they know, make them stop you.
Exactly.
Don't just give up right away. Make them stop you. So if they know that they need to stop Alex Barnes now and they've adjusted their defense to stop him, well, make them stop you. Don't just stop giving them the ball because you think that they've adjusted and they've fixed their defense. It's not the way you do things. I mean, how many people do we see out here in high school sports? They run what they run and tell you to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't stop it, they're going to run it again and again and again until you stop it. And clearly they had not stopped Alex Barnes on his first three carries. The one was 2 yards. But 75 and 19 yards are good enough.
Good.
And positive yards on the other carry show that they haven't been able to actually stop this. So keep feeding them the rock, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's not that hard to figure out.
Well, use both of them. Use Dalton and
Barnes.
Well,
yeah, and that's what they did in the first half.
Yeah, right.
You know, they used
and
Dalton.
It worked.
And clearly they used Dalton more than Barnes in the first half,
sure,
too, but at least they used Barnes.
Yes.
At least they knew that that was an option.
Yes.
And, I mean, I've said this all year with Alex Dalton is, yeah, he went 12 of 14 passing. But like you said, those are the short passes. They're not going to the deep ball he threw got picked. Okay, so they're not going to throw the ball down the field. And I didn't see him this week, but I saw him last week. He has problems with accuracy throwing the ball deep.
Yes.
There's no question about that. He's got a gun.
Yes.
But he can't find his guys when he's throwing deep. And that's clearly the most important part of throwing the ball deep is to be accurate,
mm-hmm,
and put it where it needs to be, because that's pointless to throw the ball deep if you can't get it where it needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Alex Dalton is a running back.
Yes.
He's not listed as a running back.
Right.
You talk about you shouldn't even list him as running backs. You shouldn't list Alex Dalton as a quarterback.
Probably.
But that's what he is because he throws the ball every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
He is a sprinter. Was that at Hayes? Is that now at K-State? He's a running back.
And
okay,
he played well, I should say.
He did play well against Oklahoma. And I'm not trying to discredit that.
Right.
But when I say that,
but
and
everybody
and
knows
on,
what his strength is.
Oklahoma knows,
yes,
he's a running back. So
right,
if you take your other back out of the backfield,
you make it easier.
TCU
for
didn't give Alex Dalton anything.
No.
Because they knew exactly what he was going to try to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they just shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a chance. So if you go into that game, it's the same mindset as 2 years ago on the other way, on the other direction, though. You're going into this game and you're play calling. Oklahoma knows. TCU put it on film last week for him.
Mm-hmm.
Key on the quarterback.
Right.
Stop the quarterback in the run game.
Mm-hmm.
And so for Bill Snyder to come out and say, oh, we're doing things in the quarterback run game, everybody in America knows you're doing things in the quarterback run game. This isn't new to 2017. You mentioned, does Alex Dalton have something on Snyder and Dimmel? No, he doesn't. It's not about Alex Dalton. This is how K-State's always run their offense. Jesse Ertz turns into a running back a lot. Jake Waters turned into a running back,
yeah,
way too much.
Yes.
Way too much for the cannon that he had and the ability that he had offensively to throw the football and throw it deep, by the way, too. He's not Alex Dalton, who can't throw the ball deep with accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
He could do that. And so this isn't a new problem.
No.
Colin Klein was a running back.
Yes.
He was a bruiser. This goes back to when they were winning games. So that is one thing that aggravates me about K-State fans that talk about the games and like, oh, the play call, why do we have so much in the quarterback run game? I'm like, you watch K-State ever since Michael Bishop was here. You know that the quarterback run game is a key part of what they're doing. But you do have to have something that's going to counter it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got something, if you've got a hot hand, keep riding them. They didn't go, and Dana Dimmel wasn't the prime offensive coordinator back then when L. Roberson was running the football. L. Roberson's another guy that was a better runner than thrower as
yes,
a quarterback. But they didn't go away from Darren Sproles.
No.
There's a reason he's the all-time leading rusher at K-State. And there's a reason L. Roberson's in the top five, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because they countered it, and they used it. They used all their strengths to the best of their ability when they had them. And they're not doing
weapons.
That right now.
They use their weapons.
Exactly.
And apparently,
what drives me nuts,
quarterback's your only weapon.
There were two guys, Barnes and Sillman, that were on the Doak Walker watch list at the beginning of this season.
They don't get the ball.
They don't give them the ball. All I heard was how deep running back is for K-State coming into the year. Well, give them the ball then.
I don't even know why K-State has more than one running back on their roster.
Nobody
unless
does.
They're going to get hurt because they're going to be a decoy and stand there. It's ridiculous. Something's got to change if K-State They either got to find a quarterback that actually can throw the ball and be a throwing threat, which that's not who they recruit there, or they want the dual threat quarterback, and that's fine. And sometimes you'll find that guy, that diamond in the rough. You know, Michael Bishop was certainly a guy that they got in the JUCO route, but and L. Roberson was not a bad passer. It wasn't perfect, but he wasn't bad. But this situation, it just seems to be getting – maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like each and every year, K-State has more and more dependence on the quarterback each and every year to run. It seems like it continues to get a little bit worse. I mean, that's mind-boggling. 15% of your running plays against TCU went to the running back? Do the math on that. 15%. That would be basically only 1.5 out of every 10 carries goes to a running back. Mm. That means 9 out of every 10, basically, go to your quarterback. Gee, that's not predictable at all.
Yeah. I would say it's...
And on top of it, a quarterback like doesn't throw the ball very well.
Yeah, like getting worse every year.
When
Colin Klein was there, they used John Huber too.
Yeah, they did.
You know, they used that counter that they had. But ever since Jake Waters has come, I don't really know that it's gotten any worse year to year. I think it's just the play calling's just so bad that you just don't know. I mean, I can't even tell you how many times we're pulling our hair out about Jake Waters running the football. And I don't think that's any worse than what it is now.
And the other reason why you don't run your quarterback 25 times a game is don't get him hurt. And look at Jesse Ertz right now. You're not playing.
Yeah.
And now you got a one-dimensional guy at quarterback.
And that's happened to him twice, too.
Uh-huh. Yep.